This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper today an author whose book, when I got it, I'm telling you, I got home on Monday from an appointment. I got the book, and I opened it up, and I read the first chapter, and I couldn't stop. And I really, literally could not stop reading. It is so good. Sometimes a book just blows your mind, and this one did. And it is by Jonathan Santlaffer. And Jonathan has been on the program before. He is, of course, an award-winning author. I've loved all of his books. He is just fantastic, and I'm so happy to welcome you back, Jonathan. Hi.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Wow, I'm fine. And the new book, The Last Mona Lisa, is amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You may have seen or missed that it was a Today Show pick yesterday.
Aha!
Total surprise to me. I mean, I found out about an hour before, so I watched it, but that was pretty great.
Well, you know? It has just everybody is talking about it. It has already, was already selected as a best book, I think. I think by probably everyone who's read it for 2021. You are, we've spoken about this before, that you are an artist in addition to being a great writer. And you are now officially, we have to crown you as the word artist, because you paint a picture. And it's funny, I get a lot of people who are, are starting to write, and they'll say to me, well, what should I do? What do I have to think about when I'm writing? I don't know exactly what to say. And I always say to them, paint a picture. Make me feel like I am there. And boy, did you do that with this book.
That is really, really good advice to any writer. I appreciate that you said that. And any book I'm writing, almost anything I'm writing, I need to see it in my mind, because I want the reader to see it with me, to experience it with me, to, in this book, in The Last Mona Lisa, I want people walking down those streets, Florence, Italy. I want them behind the scenes, seeing all of that stuff. And so yes, indeed, a book, I think, writing has to be cinematic, at least to me. I really need that for myself. And I think that way you bring the reader along with you. And the reader has their own experience, but they're seeing it, they're imagining it, they're with you on the trip.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me. When I it was so funny. I started reading the book, and I knew it was going to be good, but starting with this first chapter, I'm starting to see it, and this always happens to me when it's like I feel it's like a moment of a miracle. I'm in the book, but I'm seeing it in my head. I see it as a film. I worked in Hollywood for a while, so I did scripts and stuff. So when I start seeing a book as completely, I almost forget I'm reading it. And that happened with this book.
Well, that makes me very happy. Very happy. That first chapter, I envision and recreate the actual theft, the 1911 theft of the Mona Lisa from the Louvre Museum, which some people know about and others don't, but it really happened. And I put myself in the head of the thief, Vincenzo Perugia, who was a disgruntled Louvre employee who had been fired and then hid in a broom closet overnight, came out in the morning when the museum was closed to the public, And he knew exactly how to take the painting off the wall because he had been the carpenter who had just built the frame and glass for it. He took it off the wall, left the glass and frame in a stairwell, and walked out of the museum.
Lisa. I mean, it's so thrilling just thinking about it. And as you said, it's cinematic. Now, I don't know if they've already optioned this in Hollywood, but if they haven't, I'm telling everybody, contact those streaming people. We need a new and wonderful show. And this one, wow, everything.
Well, thank you. I mean, there is talk on that front, but I won't disclose it yet. But, I see it. I don't know. I'm not, you know, when I was writing it, and because I do think I have a visual mind, I did see it as a movie or a series, and certain stories, because, you know, this story is a mix. What I did was mix fact and fiction. So, you know, the whole beginning, as I said, the theft itself is based almost entirely on fact. And then you go to the present, and you go back and forth in time. But I created a backstory for the thief and his great-grandson, Luke Peroni, who is coming to Italy to find this long-lost prison diary of the thief. What he doesn't know, of course, is he's not the only one looking for it. But I had a great, you know, it was great fun, not always easy, but great fun for me to move between the past and the present, to see how they would affect each other, to play with real events that I had researched and knew happened, real people, and then to invent other characters that would come to life as much or even more.
And of course, as we said, it is a current day thriller. It is just like any, you know, action packed thriller, because we have the Interpol, and that always, you know, is a wonderful, wonderful tool. And so as you know, thinking about it as a film, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I want to film the Interpol headquarters. I can see it in my head. And the character, tell us about this. Well, of course, we have Luke, who is the great-grandson of the thief. But we also have this wonderful story that you've woven in here of a character that we want to know more about.
Ah, do you mean John Washington Smith?
I love it. I wanted you to say the name, because just the name, I thought, you know, you when you come out with a name and you have to think of a name that you want people to remember, and I tell you that people will remember this name. You combine the right thing, an ordinary name, and then it's just, you know, on streaming video, I kept thinking of this as streaming video. I was thinking, I want to know more about John Washington Smith for many of all of his. I mean, I could do a spinoff already. I could do a spinoff.
All right.
You know, I could take him into lots of adventures, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, I created him. He's a totally created fictional character. But, you know, when you're writing and you create characters, they start, and you get to know them, and you write more about them, and you're writing your book, they start taking on, they start telling you what they need to do, what they say. And Smith, who starts out, I think, as a somewhat difficult, also obsessed character, he was a very important character for me. And he is on the same quest that Luke Peroni is on, trying to find out the truth behind this prison diary and behind the Mona Lisa and what really happened and what exists today. But I felt like these two men who come from different worlds and different backgrounds and have a natural antipathy needed to come to see each other and have some kind of respect and sympathy, let's say, or empathy for one another as their lives kind of crash together. So I'm glad that you like him as a character. I think he's funny for me, Patsy, because, as I said, when I'm writing characters, it's like they're living in my house with me, you know? I think about them all the time. Alexandra is another character who, I mean, they're the three main characters, Smith, Luke, and Alex. And their interaction to me is kind of, you know, let me see, I'm digressing for a moment, but when I think about it, when I thought about it as I wrote and later on, everybody in this book is kind of hiding something, hiding a secret, or, you know, there's some sort of lie that they're defending. You know, it's very much a book about family secrets and lies and obsession and how those things play out, both in the past and how they affect the present. Would you agree? Do you think so?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, when I was reading it, and as you said, you know, it goes back and forth in time. So we have this wonderful, wonderful, this modern section that I love. I just right there alone, I would turn that into a film. And then we have with this, you know, the 1911 period, I chapter six, which is, I think, so beautifully written. And I have to ask you about that chapter, because you wrote this chapter, chapter six, it's December 1910. And it is like a stroll through Paris. It's a wonderful, wonderful chapter.
Well, of course, I don't have my book in front of me. I'm not at home. I'm in upstate New York.
Well, this is the one where Simone and Vincent. I love this.
Yeah.
I love this. This is a fantastic chapter.
You know, this book became for me, you know, these characters. It's Vincent the thief and Simone, his wife in the past, and their love story to me is sort of, in a way, a parallel to the love story in the present between Luke and Alex. And, you know, I don't want to give too many things away, but that story in the past for me became so vivid, so real. And to give Vincent Vincenzo a reason to go through with the theft, you know, and also, as you say, to walk through Paris, you know, turn of the century. I mean, that was awfully fun to do, you know, to do that research and to imagine it and to try and imagine the smells. And you remember later in the book, Luke comes to Paris and actually finds the apartment that his great-grandfather and Simone lived in. So that was very exciting for me. I didn't imagine I would do that until I was later in the book writing it, you know. So there are always surprises for me. I'm not a great outliner because I like to be excited by what happens on the page.
Well, let the characters take you, and they do take you. I can see that they became a very big part of you, and also you put a very big part of yourself in it, because you are such a fine artist. Your work is shown and held, but you know, in all sorts of prestigious places. I don't know, you're at the Metropolitan, you're at the Chicago, you know, you're such a fine artist, and I think only you could write this book, because it took it needed somebody who was great with words, but also somebody who was great with art and understood the artist and understood the art. And all of that is rolled into this book. It's just magnificent.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think it was Lee Child who says on the book, it was the novel I was born to write, which was so kind and generous. You know, maybe you don't know this about me, but for the last 20 years, my sort of side job has been that I paint legitimate, that is, legal forgeries for art collectors. So collectors come to me, sometimes they've donated an important painting to a museum and they want a copy for their house, and I do that or other reasons. But it really got me inside the head of the forger in the book, of Yves Chaudrin, the Parisian art forger who forges the Mona Lisa. And I could understand, who was a real person, by the way, and suspected as part of this crime, but I could actually imagine what it must have been like for a person like that to forge a painting on the magnitude of the Mona Lisa, because I haven't forged the Mona Lisa, but I have made copies of many paintings, and I understand it. I understand what it's like to slip inside another person's skin and look at the decisions they've made in their painting and replicate the color. And so those were, I mean, they're also all the things that drew me to this story very much. So I'm glad that you see that. It is a story. I mean, you know, it's going into Florence and going behind the scenes and seeing certain works of art that Luke has to see. I did all of that, of course. I mean, somebody asked me in another interview, they said, was your research very difficult? And I said, oh, yeah, it was a terrible, terrible story. I mean, I had to go to Florence, to go to Paris. You know, everybody's research should be that challenging. But, yeah, it was wonderful. I mean, it was wonderful to do. And to get behind the scenes. And then, you know, I spent 1 week in Florence where I traced every one of my characters' roots. So I knew exactly what was on that corner, what happened there, you know, and I would figure out what was there in the past, what was there now. That was very exciting for me to do.
Oh, and I had, you know, I was going to mention the Florence part because I spent a lot of time in Florence too, and so when I'm reading it, and I'm thinking, actually, at one point I got tears in my eyes. I said, "Oh, he's captured this! I'm in Florence," and I was so thrilled with it. So, yes, you've done a really fantastic.
Thank you. I've gotten so many emails and messages from people who thanked me. That because during the pandemic, being closed in, that they thanked me for a trip to Florence and Paris, you know, and that made me feel really, really good. You know, I mean, that's the wonderful thing about books, isn't it? That we can go places, you know, our minds just take us there. And so for me, like you said earlier, I just want to paint the most vivid possible picture for my reader, to my listener, my reader, to take that vacation, let's say, or that trip.
It was for me. You know, I get so many books, Jonathan. I get so many books now, and people,
sure,
you know, are sending me now so many books, sort of dystopian books. I'm getting now a lot of, you know, pandemic-y kind of books, and I needed this book. I'll tell you, it was like everything sort of stopped for me. I know that in between, once I started reading it, at some point I must have made some food. I know I made a cup of tea, but I didn't really think about anything. I was in the book. I was like, I was so happy. I forgot about everything else, and I forgot. I didn't look at the news. I didn't, and you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, it was a news-filled thing, and I didn't care. I was so very, very happy.
Well, that makes me equally happy because, you know, in today's world, I'm sorry, everyone, but the last thing I want to read is a dystopian novel when we're living in a dystopian
exactly.
world.
Exactly, I'm
and,
telling you.
No, I want to, I want my readers to have a great time. I mean, yes, my book is also, as people have pointed out, a thriller.
Oh, it's a thriller.
Scary moments, you know, but you know, I've always loved to be scared, so I like scaring my readers too. But I want a thrill ride. I don't want real life. I mean, I want, you know, writing and art is like taking real life but tweaking it to this other level. And I wanted this to take people out of their lives. It took me out of my life, you know. I mean, I spent all this time writing it. Nothing makes me happier, by the way, than what you said. Somebody said to me recently, you know, I stayed up till half the night reading your book. I read it in a day and a half. And I don't bother to tell them how many years it took me to write it. That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's what I want. I want someone just to be entrenched in the book. Because, you know, that's the greatest compliment you can get.
It is. And, of course, I want to mention, and I'm sure because you know, over the years, you've had somewhere in the back of your mind all of this knowledge, all of this information is there. And I wanted to mention that, of course, the book is dedicated to Joy, and just I know that she would just love this book.
Yeah, well, the book is dedicated to Joy, my late wife, and as I say, I mean, it's probably obscure, or most people don't understand the meaning, and that's okay, but this was a book I started many, many years ago, and then my wife died unexpectedly, very tragically, and I stopped working on this novel, and it took me a while to get back to writing, and the thing I wrote was a memoir called The Widower's Notebook, and then, you know, eventually I got back to this novel, and I knew Joy would be happy that I got back to this novel. She always thought it was going to be my greatest novel. So,
well, I'm sure she was looking over your shoulder there and saying, "Do it. You've got it right. Go for it, babe." And of course, her name was Joy, which is of course a very important word for me. And I have her book. Now, I have sort of some reference books that I keep next to my reading chair, and her book, Food City, is next to my, I see it every day. I look at that book, I have it next to me, and I refer to it often, and I tell other writers, I say to writers, if you want to really make your book come alive, make sure that you write about food. And if you want to know about food, and particularly food in New York, if you have a book set in New York, if you don't read this book, you're crazy. Because Food City by Joy Santlaffer is one of the best reference books about food ever written.
Thank you. I agree. I think, you know, one of the things about that book is Joy chose New York because at one point, New York fed the country. And the world. I mean, it was this amazing port. And I remember Joy researching. And Joy was a researcher by nature, by occupation, and then started working on this amazing book. But that book's also, people tell me about it all the time, how much fun it is and how filled with things they never knew, you know, facts and stories. Yeah, I look at it periodically as well. Of course, it holds other feelings for me, but I'm very happy to hear that you have it. And I think one day Joy and I would have maybe collaborated on some kind of food novel. But in any case, yeah, I hope she knows I finished this book.
Well, I'm sure she did. And the name of it is The Last Mona Lisa. And of course, Michael Connelly writes Unstoppable. What happens next? Oh, well, everybody's writing wonderful things. I must tell you that I love the Italian cover to the book.
Oh, yeah, it's very nice.
Isn't it beautiful? I think I'm going to buy the Italian version, and maybe I can actually try to wade through it and improve my Italian.
Oh, my Italian is terrible.
But
I lived a year in Rome, and my Italian is still terrible.
Well, I actually, because I studied Latin, I did many years of Latin, I can read, actually, Italian quite well. I don't speak it as well, because I'm sort of, shy about it, but reading, I'm pretty good. So I think I'm going to order myself, because I just want to have that book cover on my table. It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful. I mean, the Italian publisher did a great job. I mean, I will get it too, and I might try reading it. I can read some. I have to say that after doing a lot of research in Florence, I am determined to live there for a month at least and try and get my Italian to be decent enough that I can have a conversation. But it was always a beautiful city to me, but it came alive for me for this book. Really came alive for me.
And you bring it alive for everybody. And I just want to recommend it to everybody.
So much.
Get this book. It's called The Last Mona Lisa, and it's by Jonathan Santlaffer. Jonathan, you have a website. Tell people what it is.
It's www.jonathansantlaffer.com. I'm sorry that my name is so long and impossible, but Jonathan with an A, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, Stantlofer, S-A-N-T-L-O-F-E-R, kind of the way it sounds. I think even if you misspell my name.
They can find it.
You'll find me. You'll find me.
And while they're at it, once they finish this book, they can go back and read some of your other five novels, which includes one of my favorites, which is called The Death Artist. So there are a lot of books they can read that you've written, but the new one is fantastic. I hope that we will actually, I'm telling you, you have to promise, when you have an official announcement that it's been optioned and it's going to Hollywood, come on, Joanne Paper, and announce it.
Oh, I will. You've got my word.
Okay, because I have my fingers crossed. All of my listeners are going to cross their fingers. I'm going to tell them, cross your fingers. And
okay, and Patsy, you and I can be in a crowd scene. We can be sitting at a cafe somewhere.
Oh, yes. Right? Oh, I want to be in that crowd scene. Oh, yes. Let's do the one in the Paris, you know, where they're eating the oysters. We'll be in the background. How about that?
Oh, that's, yes. I remember, I remember writing that.
I love that scene. Chapter 6. I'm telling you, everybody read Chapter 6. This is, they should use this in a college course as an example of a perfect chapter. How about that?
Oh, you're so great. I have to go back and read it now, you know?
Yeah, because now everybody's going to go around saying, what's in that chapter 6? What's in But I know it. I almost know it by heart because I read it. Chapter 6, I read 6 times. I'm telling you that.
Really?
Yep. I love it so much.
I was being interviewed by Joyce Carol Oates. And she asked me to read that chapter, but then we ran out of time. So I didn't get to read it. But it's funny. I guess that chapter must have...
It resonates. Well, this is pretty good. I've Joyce Carol Oates picked it, and I picked it. Well, you know, maybe I'm not so bad, huh?
Whew. I never thought you were so bad. Come on.
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you, and I had so much fun meeting you at the Algonquin Hotel and getting a little tipsy. I think I got a little tipsy that day.
I think we all did.
I think we got a little tipsy, but it was lots of fun. I hope to meet you back at the Algonquin, if not in Paris, where we're going to do that crowd scene together.
I think that sounds like the dream. Drink. We'll have a drink in Paris.
Oh, Pernod. I want some Pernod. Okay. Okay. Look forward to hearing from you. You come and announce your big announcement. It's going to be here on Joy and Paper, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Say my best to all your listeners and to you.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
All right. We'll go to commercials and then we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back. And in a minute, I'm going to be talking to a wonderful poet and about her book. But I just want to say, take a minute and thank Stephen. You know, I have a new sponsor, and Stephen Plathney is just fantastic. He's really a supporter of readers and writers, and the name of his company is Efficient Home Services, and they're going to be advertising here, and starting next week we will have their ads running. But meanwhile, I want to thank them so much for joining here the sort of Joy on Paper family, and the name of the company is Efficient Home Services, and they are they offer solar panels for homeowners with zero effort, zero upfront costs. And you can trade in your never-ending and always increasing power bill for a much smaller solar bill. So I'm looking forward to having Steve on the program one day and talk about his company and all that he is doing to help promote solar energy. And we will start running their commercials next week. And again, thank you so much, Steve, for joining Joy on Paper and supporting authors, because that's what we do. And so I was so happy when I got the next book. It is called Tears of Change, and it's written by Debbie. I'm not sure about how to pronounce her name, so I'm going to ask her. I think it's Debbie Montegia. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Patsy, how are you?
Okay, how do you pronounce your last name? Montegia?
Montegia, you're close.
Montega.
Yeah.
Okay, Debbie Montega. It's spelled Montegia. Okay.
Correct.
Wow.
It's Italian.
Italian. Okay, well, you know, Debbie, I was, I get a lot of books, and I love, one of the things I love books about poetry. I love poetry. I believe in the power of poetry, that you can find a lot, so much, so many of sort of the answers to your questions can often be found in poems. And I believe in it, and not just from the point of view of reading it, but also of writing it, because you can find so much of yourself in writing poetry. So when I got your little book, and it is a little book, but it's filled with deep meaning, and I hope that, are you planning to read a few of the poems for us today?
Oh, I sure can. You bet.
Okay, well, that's what I would like, because, I mean, that's what it is. Poetry, you have to hear it. And so I will let you select which poems you want to read, but I will tell everyone that, you know, for all of us, and particularly I think in these trying times and difficult times, we need inspiration. We need courage. We need to find strength. And I think that you offer that here in this book.
Well, thank you. Yes, my poems cover a variety of emotions, and they go deep. I love what you said, because that is poetry. I call it in my book a creative form of expression that unfolds the magic and vision of our heart and soul. You know, it's a step away from the intellect, and it's expressing true vulnerability. So it's real, and I tap into some deep areas because my poetry started through my journey with anxiety several years ago. That's when I started writing, and it transitioned from being sad to happy. So I have quite a variety of different poems addressing different emotions and situations. I could talk about children and passing and contemplation. So there's usually, everybody can find a poem in there that will resonate with them.
So which poem do you want to start with?
I will start with Weeping Willow. Weeping Willow is about a tree, a weeping willow, obviously. And it's under my section, Contemplation. And it starts out like this. Weeping Willow. Have you ever seen a tree so tall? Has it reached its highest peak? The branches droop so soft and serene. Does this weeping willow weep? Is it tears that make the tree so lush, the luster of its slender leaves? I don't think a tree would grieve. It's always there to please. Its beauty and its shadow cast a glow in late afternoon. When nighttime falls, the willows sway beneath the peaceful moon. When When dawn arrives, the specks of dew embrace each delicate leaf. That's why one might say, a weeping willow weep. The wind whispers through each willow as the branches swing to and fro, a marvel of God's creation as we watch this willow grow.
Oh, that's beautiful. And it's funny, it brought back memories for me, because when I was a girl, we had, there was a row of weeping willows on the side of our backyard. We had an enormous backyard. And on the side, there was a row of weeping willows, but they were not on our property. They were on the other side of the fence. Now, the reason is, and I believe this is true, although my mother would never admit it, I believe that when they put the fence up, I think they were probably on our property, but she didn't want them on our property because of, you know, that superstition that people used to say, it's a weeping willow, you don't want. So they put the fence up, all a very long fence, because it, as I said, it was an enormous backyard. And the weeping willows were on the other side. But of course, they they were hanging over onto our side. So
right.
We had the beauty. But I guess I have a feeling my father did that for my mother. He probably gave up part of our land. Probably belonged to us, but they were so beautiful.
Right. I know. That's what kind of inspired me to write about them, because they are. They're very, you know, as they sway and the wind blows through, they're just really pretty trees.
They are. They're beautiful. And, of course, I'm from northern Michigan, and we had these lovely days where you'd hear the weeping willows just in the wind. It is fantastic. So I really love this poem. So I'm glad you started with that one.
That one really resonated with you. That's good.
Okay, so what's next?
I think the next one I want to read is one of my favorites. It's called A Child's World, and this is kind of through a child's voice speaking. And I actually call it the child's creed, because I think every child could have this up in their room. Okay, and this is how this one goes, A Child's World. I'm only a child. Please watch me grow. Teach me the things that I need to know. My world is little, I can't yet see. My journey in life, my destiny. Guide me now when I am small. These years that count the most of all. When you scold, it's hard to understand. Punish me with a guiding hand. Not one so firm it hurts my pride. Let me know you are on my side. When I am wrong, politely tell me so. Do not yell, I have no other place to go. Be kind to me, you must see, I'm not a perfect entity. The mistakes I make, my messes unclean, are my stepping stones to learn and succeed. The tidiness can be altered a bit, but the adventure in me must never quit. Read with me, write with me, sing with me too. These are the things that I like to do. It's quality time, a necessity to pursue. It's important right now that I lean on you. Please give me all the love I need. It nourishes me. It puts me at ease. Hugs and kisses, they are the best. Their gentleness assures me that I am blessed. I'm only a child. Please watch me grow. Soon I'll be an adult, and then I will know the love and togetherness that we shared will bring me lifelong happiness, because I knew you cared.
Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And it's a poem that every parent should have on their desk. That's what they really need, because it is something that they should really think about. And I love how you said about reading. So it is important. It is important for parents to think about how a child thinks about them, and what they're looking for. And this is what's the beauty of poetry. Something as simple as this, simple words can touch the heart. And I hope that more people will, you know, get this book and share these poems. And send them on to other people, and buy this book for other people, and say, you know, you're a parent. There's some poetry in here that you should read.
Mm-hmm. I have some other poems, too. I wrote one when my daughter left home, so it's about empty nesters, you know, when they go off to school.
Oh, I know that.
You know, the mother and a mom could really, or a mother and a woman could really find a lot in this book. I've had real tremendous feedback with it. Them just opening it up and reading some of the poetry, because it's like you said, it's life challenges and adventures and happenings, and we're all, you know, human. We experience the same emotions, so it really can resonate with so many people.
Now, when you got the idea, you started writing poetry, you hadn't planned, you know, from your youth to write a book about poetry. But the idea, once you started writing poetry, you decided to go ahead and publish it, which is important to share this type of thing with people, and to be out there and be bold enough to say, okay, I want this book to be out there. I want to share it with people.
Yes, that's exactly how I felt. And I'll tell you why. When I started, like you said, I really didn't think I would grow up to be a poet. it materialized about 25 years ago when I was going through a really severe case of anxiety. And I had to go into therapy for healing, to heal it, because nothing else was working, you know, any anti-anxiety drugs, anything like that. And one of my healing processes for that anxiety, and by the way, it is gone completely. I never get it anymore, which is wonderful. That was a kind of a little message I wanted to tell people too. If you do the work, you can get rid of that anxiety if you're holding on to that. But I moved, I had to journal to kind of release some of the emotions I was suppressing. And it was through my journaling that I started extracting emotions and feelings. And I started writing poetry, and then I started rhyming in my poetry, and I enjoyed it. So that's kind of where my journey began. So throughout the years, raising my kids and working, and I would just sit down and write. And that's kind of how the book evolved. I had friends and family say, why don't you do something with this book? With your work, you have so much poetry, and it's beautiful, and I think so many people could benefit from it. So I finally did. Many years later, it's a book now. I don't have all my work in there, but most of it.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that, for example, I have been doing over the years since I started this mm-hmm. program is I talk to many writing groups, and I've talked to many groups of people in general about reading. So I'm encouraging reading. And I've spoken to veterans groups. And one of the things I always tell them is, and now, particularly now, I know that they're going through hell. But one of the ways to really calm yourself down and to change your anxiety is to write, to journal. Mm. And I've encouraged veterans to write any type of book, and not a book about what they went through. I don't think that's as helpful as writing a book that you want to share something. It could be a cookbook. It could be your a book about your silly uncle. It could be a children's book, or it could be a book of poetry. Because once you start that process of getting your words down on paper, that in itself forces you to sort of calm down, forces you to, I think your whole breathing changes when you're writing. You're starting to, you know, see words one at a time, and then they can grow, and you can play with them, and it's fun. So I'm a great believer in the therapy of writing.
Yes, I agree 100% with you. It's very self-reflective. And the power of journaling is just amazing, because people say, oh, I can't journal. I usually like to journal every day, and I like to do 3 pages. But I don't put a whole lot of thought process in it. I just kind of get what's on my mind out. And then after all that clutter, I call it, is gone, then you start going deeper. And then you start writing, just like you said. All of a sudden, things start to materialize. And you're right. You can surprise yourself that you do have a talent to write.
Yes, people are. I have had some really fun encounters with people who have done and followed my suggestions. And they said, well, I didn't know I could write. I didn't do well in high school. English was my worst class. I don't understand any of these terms that they're talking about. You know, I don't know what a metaphor is. And I say, it doesn't matter. Get the words on paper. they start after a while, and I said, and this happens to every writer, even famous authors, they will write all sorts of stuff, and they go back, and they have to edit, have to rewrite it.
Right.
And I said, so you don't, it doesn't matter. You put it on the paper, then you go back, and after a while, if you look at it long enough, you start adjusting words, a word here, a word there, a word, and in no time at all, you're saying, wow, you know, I can write. And then you reflect back and you say, why the heck didn't I have a good English teacher? So,
right.
You know, or why in high school so many kids are turned off of reading and writing because they give you the most god-awful books to read in high school. Those American literature books are like horrible. I don't know where they get these stories from. Instead of good writing, instead of good poetry or real poetry, I mean, like yours, poetry from the heart, because it then mm-hmm. speaks to you. And so I'm thrilled always when I get a poet on, because I don't really have to, you don't have to prod a poet to read, actually. I found that.
Uh-huh.
A poet will read at the drop of a hat if you give him a chance, right?
Right, right. And you know, and you're right with what you say. I like to say, if you can speak, you can write.
Exactly.
Just put it on paper. And just what you said, that's what editors are for. Even a lot of your famous writers, I don't think, can put together sentences in the pure structure, you know,
direct
grammar sometimes. And that's why you have editors. That's what they do.
Exactly.
So you get your thought process down and you get your ideas. I mean, you'd be amazed. I mean, look at J.K. Rowling. You know, how many times did she go, and 18 times or something?
Oh, 18 times. 18 rejections, yes.
Was it 18? I think that's what I read once.
Yeah, 18.
She, you know, pursued it, and look at her.
That's it. That's,
that's history.
And there are some writers who had a lot more rejections than that, and they're now global best-selling authors. So it's a matter, and you are surprised, and it doesn't matter. It does not matter how you did in high school. It really doesn't.
No.
What matters is what's in your heart, and if you are, if you have really that stick-to-itness that you really need in order to write a book, and dedication, and if you do, and even if it's not the greatest book in the world, your family is so proud of you. You've done something not just for this generation, the next generation, and all the generations after. I mean, just think about it. If we look back at most of us have, I'm thinking about my great grandfather, who actually had an interesting life. He had some difficulties with Russia and all sorts of things. He never wrote anything. If he would have, I would have it today. You know,
yeah.
So it's a legacy that you give your family and preserve for history. So write a book, and I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And the name of the book is Tears of Change. And do you have a website or anything, or Facebook? Where can people follow you?
I do, Patsy. I have a website. It's called tearsofchangepoetry.com. And you can order my book through Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And I also sell, if you want to know a little bit more about me, you can go to that website. And I also sell 4 of my poems as poem overlays. And they're very unique gifts. So like the Child's World that I sent you, if you sent me a picture of your children, I would overlay that poem. It's transparent over your picture. And then deliver it back to you, and then you frame it. So it's a forever keepsake.
Okay, that's a great idea. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I have like 4 of them, and they can go look at them if they're interested in purchasing them. And it's available at tearsofchangepoetry.com.
All right. Well, Debbie Matiga, I thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. It's been an absolute joy to talk to you. And again, I hope that people will go out and get this book. You need it now in this time of difficulty. We all need a little poetry in our hearts. So thank you again for being on Joy on Paper.
Okay. Thank you, Patsy. I so enjoyed our interview.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Oh, it is a nice book. You know, really, get this book and get a few copies and give them to your friends, because she has also quotes in there about friendship, about kindness, about that wonderful, wonderful little book. And I really enjoy it. And again, I have to thank Jonathan Santloff for, what a book he wrote. And of course, today is Pub Day Plus Two for Carol J. Perry and for her new book, in her Haunted Haven mystery series, Be My Ghost. And I know that it's doing so well, and I want everybody to get this book. Be My Ghost is a fun, fun book. And particularly for all of you people in our area, I just enjoy reading it and sort of picking out where the locations, because of course she uses locations in our area here, and I'm in St. Petersburg, Clearwater, all around our area, and also she has, let's say, she mentioned some baseball people in that book, and I'm always happy when somebody mentions baseball people, and Joe DiMaggio, and Babe Ruth. And so there are just lots of wonderful stories, lots of ghosts in her new series. And she just informed me that she finished book 12 and it is off, and they are already designing the cover of her Witch City Mysteries. And Witch City Mysteries are among my favorite cozy mysteries. And I am so thrilled. She was on the program on Tuesday. It was so great to see her. And I hope that you will get the new book, Be My Ghost, because it is fun. Don't you dream about somebody just, you know, giving you, putting in your will, in their will, and then you inherit a little hotel? Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't it be fun? Just a nice little inn. And who cares if it's full of ghosts? I don't mind. Put me into your will. I'd love to inherit a hotel. Oh, boy, that would be so much fun. And that's what's nice about these books. You're living the dream in Carol J. Perry's Be My Ghost, because there she has a wonderful, wonderful, it's just so clever. She's so clever. You know, when an author is clever, it just gives you a thrill. And that's Carol J. Perry, and she's a little bit scary, but it's nice and lots of fun. Oh, well, the time has gone quickly. I can't believe it. Another day. Anyway, everybody, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture or streaming video or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Witch City Mysteries. You never know. And I hope that we will be able to see The Last Mona Lisa by Jonathan Santloff on streaming video soon. And he's going to come and announce it here. I know he's going to get a deal. I just know it. I felt it. The minute I read that book, first chapter, I said to myself, hey, Hollywood, pick up Jonathan Santloff's book, because the Last Mona Lisa will make a great streaming video. And I need a new streaming video. I am so tired of all the reruns. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything. And, somebody wrote a nice email about you and said, they want to hear you talk more. Why don't I let Ed talk? Hey, Ed, why don't you talk more? Huh? Next.
It's your show.
Well, no, everybody wants to hear you now. Okay. Bye-bye now. Everybody, have a great and wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.